Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 306. McMonagle here with you on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Yeah. Mr. Mikey on Twitter is getting on me for, with all the stuff going on, I'm complaining about people's opinions of how they got to the World Series. Yeah, that's right. We're going to talk about how they got here, and then we're going to talk about where they're going. We have all week. The World Series was tomorrow. I'd be having a preview of the World Series. I got till Friday, and I'm settling some scores. That's right. I have the pulpit. I will settle scores. I've been settling scores on Aaron Boone, been settling scores on Brian Cashman, because we just talked about the Met manager. And I think it's unfair to really get on anyone involved with the Mets. Like, my only issue is the perception immediately that what a fun year. Like, before the game was over, we were talking about what a fun year. And, you know, I went into the series, and I remember talking to a lot of Met fans. Like, now it's like, well, hey, listen, what are you going to do with the big, bad Dodgers? Going into the series, I didn't feel that way. As they needed to win the last two games of their series, they were down 2-1 against the Padres. They really don't have much starting pitching to talk about. They're throwing bullpen games at you. And the Mets pitching had been, you know, pretty damn good. I was confident that the Mets had a real chance to win that series. And you don't know what the team is going to look like next year. So I'm not mad at any Met fan. I'm not mad at the Mets. I don't blame anyone. Everyone did a great job. I think even Mendoza, we just mentioned, there's a couple things you could always nitpick that a manager does when you lose a series, of course. I'm not saying he was perfect. Aaron Boone was perfect. He wasn't perfect. But there's no one to blame with the Mets. They had a great year. That's totally true. I just think they were good enough to warrant being angry. Like, that's how I view it. I don't even take it as a knock. I just think to suddenly, immediately, hey, what a great year. Oh, wow. I mean, how I'm so proud of this team. It's so special. What a fun year. The Grimace, the OMG. Like, and I'm just like, wait a minute. This team was the best team in baseball since June. They didn't make this up. This wasn't some fairy tale. Nobody just put them in. This isn't a movie where, you know, two of the three playoff teams got suspended for some reason and the Mets were forced into playoff action that didn't deserve to be there and went on a miracle run. They were the best team in baseball for half the season. They transformed themselves into a team who deserved to be there. Before that, sure, no one would have expected it. When you're the best, if the season started in June, the Mets would have been the one seed. I think a little bit of that goes out the window when you say, you know, oh, no one expected us to be here. Yeah, then you played like a team who deserved to be there. And so while, yeah, the takeaway from it should probably be what a fun building here. Now the team's going to be completely different. That's the other thing. And you had so many miracle things happen. Vientos become a superstar before your eyes. What you're seeing, what you got from Iglesias. You know, this is a journeyman middle infielder who hit 340 for you. I mean, that doesn't happen. Lindor became an MVP. He went from a very good player all-star to an MVP caliber player. Like, a lot of things happen that are amazing. Manaea became a top of the rotation pitcher. Severino battled through and stayed healthy. You know, a bunch of stuff happened. Buto became a weapon in the bullpen. Peterson, a player I would think most Met fans never wanted to see again, became their second best starting pitcher down the stretch. Like, a lot happened that made this team excellent. So I just think, at least for a day or two, there is some level of sadness and disappointment and anger even that they lost in the manner they lost. And then you can start talking about how the season was positive. Not like while they're losing in game six, talking about how wonderful it was. That's all. I think that's actually a positive Met take. They were so good, it shouldn't be this. I'm okay with it. Because they had an opportunity to do something special. They did. They weren't lucky to be there. They earned it. It's almost disrespectful to that group to just say, eh, it's okay, we lost. What a wonderful year. That's my only point with the Mets. It was a great year. And it was an amazing, fun ride with heroics you could not believe. But now, as we get ready for the World Series, they weren't the only one with heroics. And they weren't the only one playing great baseball. And the New York Yankees and this bullpen. And let me talk about a couple of guys here who deserve some credit as we talk about this redemption playoffs. And that's the other fun thing about this Yankee team. Like right now, can we talk about how fun the Yankees are right now as they're in the World Series? I know they're supposed to win and everything, and there's, you know, they're no fun, they're boring, the way they play the game. The same old narratives we've talked about with the Yankees forever, which I think they've completely shattered here with those three games in Cleveland and what they've done here in this postseason. No fun, those games weren't fun. Watching Giancarlo Stanton hit those home runs weren't fun. Beating Class A twice wasn't fun. But look at this redemption story that this Yankee team is on right now. Look at this redemption story. Let's start from the top real quick. Brian Cashman, at the end of last year, 82-0, got real feisty, right? Hal Steinbrenner got real feisty. Angry. Brian Cashman yelling at reporters, I think we're pretty damn good. I think we're pretty damn good. Brian Cashman was mocked for his performance in that post press conference, mocked for the idea to think they're pretty damn good. And then even when they got Soto, not enough. This team's not good enough yet. He's put together a team that was the best in the American League to the point where now we're not even celebrating. They got to the World Series. That's what they were supposed to do. Brian Cashman put that team together. Aaron Boone, much maligned manager. Nobody likes. Everybody, the Yankees will never get back to a World Series as long as Aaron Boone is managing the team. Well, he pulled every right button with this bullpen. He made every right decision. He had to juggle first base at the start of the playoffs, handled it beautifully, had to make a decision on left field, an unpopular decision, and it was the right one. Starting Carlos Rodon, game one of the ALCS. Nobody liked it. The right one. Going back to Anthony Rizzo, a lot of people questioned it, off with two broken fingers. The right one. Then his bullpen management, when the bullpen was down and exhausted, brought in guys like Leiter, who gave you some of the biggest outs of this postseason, getting it from Tim Hill. Cousins, who hasn't pitched much and was injured at the end of the year, has done an incredible job with this team. And then there's a couple of guys, obviously Stanton, we talk about, and Gleyber Torres. Those are the two, right? Everybody wanted Gleyber Torres off the team. Everybody wanted to trade him. We all know I've gone on and on about Stanton. And we can continue to do so at 888-808-1019. He deserves it. But I want to mention a couple other guys much maligned. Because I think the biggest surprise of the postseason for me, for the New York Yankees, and it's not on such an epic level. He wasn't unbelievably good. He wasn't the level of Gleyber Torres and obviously Giancarlo Stanton. They've been otherworldly in the postseason. But a lot of people were pretty fed up with Anthony Volpe, myself included. And there's a lot of questions about how come he gets just to play every day. Like other rookies come up, you know, Bird comes up, doesn't get to play every day. I'm not Bird, sorry. I'm thinking of Greg Bird. Rice comes up, doesn't get to play every day. Oswaldo Cabrera certainly doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. Jason Dominguez doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. Why does Volpe, no matter how good or bad he is, get to just play at shortstop every single day for the New York Yankees? He's terrible, his approach, he can't hit, he's got a weak throwing arm. A lot of the fans were not happy with Volpe in his second year. He's been great in this postseason. And he, honestly, if you look at it, they have this website where they do the stats for the every play and they measure it and how it changes your World Series odds. Believe it or not, I believe the biggest hit that changed their postseason odds this year and their chance to win the World Series was his base hit off of Emmanuel Class A in that inning where they got the two runs back in game four and moved John Birdie over the third base and they had first and third, nobody out. That was arguably the biggest hit of that entire series. That was the difference between winning a game four and going up 3-1 or being tied 2-2 against Cleveland. He's been great. He's been great. And then Anthony Rizzo, and as much as I'm mad at him, I've gotten a couple of days away from him not making that play, and he's been terrible defensively, shockingly bad, because I know he's got broken fingers, but it looks like he can't move out there. I don't know what's going on with him. But offensively, you want to talk about a guy who's made an adjustment here? He has abandoned all idea of power. He's abandoned all idea of trying to drive the baseball. He's standing on top of the plate in hopes to get hit, and he is choking up from the beginning of at-bats and looking to slap the ball the other way. And he has come up with some big hits that start rallies. He's come up with some RBI knocks. Like, he has really transformed himself as a hitter. And when you add those two guys right now who are just getting on base, not driving the baseball, not hitting home runs, just setting the table for the top of this lineup, Volpe and Rizzo and Verdugo at the bottom of this order has transformed this lineup. And yeah, they haven't come through with the big hit as much as you'd like, although there's plenty now after those three games in Cleveland. Their numbers with runners scoring position still isn't great. How many guys are they getting on base? How many opportunities are they giving themselves? Eventually, they're going to start to come through, and that's what happened in the final two games in Cleveland. And we'll get to the bullpen really a little bit later, because I think that is the biggest key matchup of this entire World Series. 888-808-1019. A lot of guys to praise from the New York Yankees. A lot of guys to talk about who have stepped up their game. And you want to talk about the World Series teams of the past? You want to talk about maybe not so much the 09 World Series, although there were guys who stepped up their game, but you want to talk about the dynasty Yankees and the reasons they won and who stepped up their game, and obviously Derek Jeter, and obviously, you know, even guys who, you know, Scott Brosius and, you know, Chuck Knoblauch coming through with big hits. It was about coming through in the big moment and guys stepping up and playing great in the playoffs. And right now, Anthony Rizzo looks like a far better hitter than he has at any point this year. Anthony Volpe, outside of the first 2 weeks of the season when he was great, looks like the best version of himself of his entire career right now. Verdugo having the best at-bats of his Yankee career. Giancarlo Stanton having the best at-bats of his Yankee, certainly this season. Like, so many guys are stepping up. And against the best bullpen in baseball, they did it. And that's what makes me uber positive about this World Series. 888-808-1019. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, I feel so good about to ask you this question. I ask you every morning I get you on the phone. How you feeling this morning, Brother
Mac?
I'm
feeling good today. I had some debts to settle the first hour, and now I'm just feeling good.
It's a beautiful thing, Mac. You know, I want to get into a few things with you about my Yankees, man. But I'm going to start off with my reaction to the clinch game.
Yeah.
Brother Mac, I swear to goodness. When they were coming in, and I thought about you in the top of that 10th inning, because I remember I didn't talk to you. I was trying to get on to speak to you that night, and I couldn't get through. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I was on hold, and it was time, and you were going through some other things. And I think it might even have been a short show, so I'll let it go.
Okay, that's fine, but good.
But you were saying some things about that game, and it was funny. When that 10th inning started, because I felt exactly the same way you did, I needed them to put some runs through, and especially since we were on the road, and we weren't going to get that last lick. I needed them to put some runs through and to actually send my relief pitcher in with a little bit of a comfort zone. Once they got the runners on and I saw Soto come to the plate,
yep,
I said, this dude is going to do something to get me a run. After about the first pitch or the second pitch, I just said to myself, I said, you know what? He's about to put it over the wall and finish this all right now. It's about to be done. I said it so loud that my daughter was in another room and heard me say it. And when after he hit the home run, she heard me scream, because she came out before. She's like, who are you talking to? And I said, he heard me. He just heard me.
No, I mean,
and then Weaver was able to come in and do what he had to do.
Yeah, Weaver.
You were saying some things about Soto, man, and you're so right. The guy forces, like, unlike Stanton, unlike Judge, unlike everybody else who adjusts or tries to figure out and think what the pitcher is going to give him, Soto literally forces the action from that pitcher. All the stuff that he does is to get in that guy's head and
100%.
Let him know that I own you.
100%.
Now, because I'm interested to get your feel on this, to get to the series that's coming up. And actually, before I even get into that, one thing real quick, I want to give you kudos for saying that, too, because I said it to Al last week, young Al Cintron. I said it to him last week. That is not my fault. They got beat, and we beat the people that beat them. So I don't want to hear any about that whole thing with the easy pass and all that. That is not my fault.
Nope.
The thing that I really want to get your comments on and your thoughts on, this series moving forward.
Yeah.
Brother Mac, I feel like this is about to be like a clash. Because it's almost like, in a weird kind of way, we are similar teams. We try to do the same things. Our lineup, we try to, you know, especially with the way that the bottom half of their lineup is coming through, it's the same thing we've been trying to do with ours. But like you said, to your point, I mentioned that before, it's been a slow build so far since we've been going through the postseason. I'm just hoping that we get the better of them. It seems like it might be a slugfest, but I'm hoping that we're going to get the better of their pitching. It's the only thing that concerns me and scares me is how our pitching deals with those first three guys that we see. Because at any point, the start of game, they could blow up an inning.
And thank you for the call, Val. You're 100% right. At the top of the order. I mean, I know they've got right now, Max Muncy is on base all the time. Tommy Edmond killed the Mets and obviously was the NLCS MVP. Will Smith is an excellent hitting catcher. He started off cold in this postseason, did hit a home run in game six. He's someone you got to worry about. The bottom of the order isn't great. It can be solid. Teoscar Hernandez, who had a good game six, did nothing other than that in the series. He did kill the Yankees when they came to the Bronx. But someone who's very familiar with the Yankees with his time in Toronto and then Seattle as well. So he knows the Yankees well. But you're right. It's about getting those top of the guys. It's about getting the top of the order guys out. It's about Ohtani. It's about Betts. I mean, that's what you're trying to stop, no doubt. Same thing with the Yankees. You want to stop Judge. You want to stop Soto. You want to stop Stanton. And right now you put Glaber at the top of that, and how his inability to get on base has just been through the roof. But, yeah. And that moment with Soto, you're right. I mean, watching him, and then he even said it in the postgame, like, I knew he had nothing for me. Like, I knew he was going to hit the ball hard or walk. I didn't know, I know Pedro Martinez predicted a 3-run home run. You're saying you predicted a 3-run home run. I did not know a 3-run home run was coming, but I knew he wasn't going. He was going to. I didn't even know if a hit was coming, because sometimes you hit the ball hard, you can't, you know, direct where it goes. I knew he was going to walk or hit the ball hard. There was no doubt he was not going to get fooled. He was not going to swing and miss. He was going to either foul off enough pitches and get make him work enough and walk him, or he was going to hit the ball hard. There was no doubt in my mind. And watching that at bat is as good as baseball gets. I'm not kidding. I'll never forget that moment. I was in the backyard in the makeshift setup with the TV on the fold-out table that I took from, you know, my mother's living room. I had it all set up. We're sitting out there hanging out in the it was so beautiful out. I had the fire going. It was a fun night. We'll probably do the same thing Friday night. My son's looking forward to it. We'll have the same outdoor setup on Friday night. But in that moment, watching that at bat, with, you know, my son there with me, and watching Soto's the head shaking and the pounding of the hip to remind himself to stay inside, and a little bit of the shuffle and the stare down, it's just, that is baseball perfection, man. And I'm not kidding, and I know this sounds probably either quaint or foolish or whatever you want to say. One of the main, if not the main reason I want Soto back is because I want to watch at-bats like that. It's not even, like, obviously it impacts their winning, and he's such a great dynamic player, and, you know, he's really the difference between this team and the 22 team, and now he's in the World Series. I love watching him play baseball. I want to watch him play in a Yankee uniform 160 games a year for the next 10 years. That's what I want, because I love watching baseball. I love watching the Yankees, and I love watching Juan Soto hit. He won't always come through in that spot. He won't always come through. He won't always take them to the World Series. But just watching him perform is unbelievable. Vincent in Queens. What's up, Vincent? Vinny, what are you doing? What are you fumbling around? You're listening to the radio? What are you doing?
Hello?
Oh, hey, Vincent, what's up?
Yeah, I want to talk about the New York Jets and the New York Giants.
Okay, sure. What's going on? First of all, you all right? What's going? It sounded like you were fumbling the phone for 5 minutes. You okay?
I'm driving a yellow cab.
Okay.
okay, it seems like every time you watch an NFL game, it's an old jerk quarterback that's having a great career now.
Sam Darnold and Geno Smith.
Geno Smith.
Who was the other one you said?
I could probably name a lot more of them. I didn't really research this or anything.
Yeah.
But is what I'm saying true or not?
Well, what was the other Jet one? I'm thinking of Sam Darnold and Geno Smith for sure. Who else?
Fitzpatrick had a good career.
But he had a good career with the Jets. I mean, he was a journeyman. That's not, that doesn't bother.
Fitzpatrick had a good career with the Jets?
Yeah. Fitzpatrick had one of the best seasons of his career with the Jets.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
But anyway, when you have no offensive line, it's pretty hard to win.
Mm-hmm.
So all these people that were saying, the Jets are going to the Super Bowl, the Jets are going to be a playoff team.
Yeah.
I was like, what are they talking about? You have a 40-year-old quarterback with no offensive line.
Well, they made a lot of changes to the offensive line. They brought in a Hall of Fame left tackle. They brought in a bunch of different. You thought the offensive line could be good or better, at least certainly than this.
So you think the Jets are going to the playoffs?
Not now at 2-5. No, I did at the start of the year, and I'm just saying that the offensive line is now not played well. But at the start, you're making it sound like you knew they had no offensive line. They retooled it. They brought in Moses. They brought in, they brought in a couple of guys from Baltimore. They signed a Hall of Fame left tackle. I didn't expect the offensive line to be this bad.
Okay, but if you put Daniel Jones or even Rodgers on a decent team, don't you think they would be playing decent?
Maybe better. Daniel Jones stinks, and I'm tired of seeing him. There's just no other way to put it. He stinks. He's awful. If he was on the 49ers, he might win 9 or 10 games, sure, and then he'll lose in the playoffs because he's not good enough to win.
Hello?
Plain and simple. Hello, yeah. I mean, you don't have to hear it. The audience heard it. That's just, he stinks. And we can get into that right here at 3:27 real quick before we break. The New York Giants are making a mistake going back to Daniel Jones. They are. They're making a mistake. The coach was quoted as saying, well, he gives us the best chance to win. See if you can find that clip for me. I'm sorry, Jack. I wasn't going to do this now, but I took a caller on it. See if you can find the Brian Daboll talking about Daniel Jones gives him the best chance to win. Here's the problem with the New York Giants. They're awful. 3:28, McMonagle. No, I'm just kidding. They are as bad as it gets. Here's when asked about playing Daniel Jones, because here's the fact. They went in this game getting embarrassed by Philadelphia. And to the caller's last point, the offensive line played horrendous in this game. It fell apart. We were kind of, I don't want to use the word praising, but we were very satisfied with the play of the offensive line to start the year. It was starting to build. The new offensive line coach came over from the Raiders, was doing a decent enough job. Andrew Thomas goes down, and suddenly the freaking offensive line falls apart. And really, the entire offense falls apart. That was some of the most disgusting. That was an offensive performance that is just unacceptable in the NFL. And I don't care how bad the offensive line is. The quarterback cannot provide that kind of offense. It's unacceptable. You got the wide receiver in Malik Nabers talking about how he was open, and he was. The quarterback has no vision. The quarterback doesn't stand in the pocket and take the hits, although he's tough. The quarterback tucks and runs. He has no ability to see the field. He has no ability to make judgments. He has no ability to go through progressions. None. If it's blocked up perfectly for him and he can stand back there for 5 minutes, sure, he's got the arm strength and the arm and tools to throw a ball to an open wide receiver after five or 6 seconds. And in today's NFL, every wide receivers are going to get open. You give him that much time? Sure. Sure. Great. Those quarterbacks are a die. You can get one off anywhere for the most part. You have a good offensive line that blocks it up for forever? Sure. Great. You don't pay $20 million for that. Sam Darnold can do that off the scrap heap. You just mentioned you can get Ryan Fitzpatrick to come in here and do that if you're looking for an offensive line to just block it up for forever and give a quarterback all day, sure. But here's Brian Daboll when asked, because he did pull Daniel Jones in the fourth quarter for backup Drew Lock, and was asked about the quarterback situation moving forward.
Well, I think he gives us the best chance. Number one, I thought. There were a lot of plays that he did exactly what he needed to do. And then, look, there were some plays where It wasn't just on Daniel. It was a collection of things. It wasn't just one person in protection or a route. It was a collective deal.
It's never just on Daniel, ever. And I'm not saying it necessarily has to be. Of course, it's a team sport. There's 11 of them out there on the field. It's not just on Daniel Jones, but it's on the quarterback to elevate the team. And he can't do it. The amount, the lack of touchdown scoring in his own building is so ridiculously bad, it's hard to fathom. They don't score touchdowns ever. Ever. And I'm so sick of the argument about the offensive line, because I don't care. Could Patrick Mahomes come here with this offensive line and win a Super Bowl? I don't know. But he'd throw a touchdown pass once every four or five games. It's atrocious. And honestly, I hate saying this, but who gives a damn about who gives them the best chance of winning? Because they can't win. And winning these games are meaningless now. Meaningless. They're 2-5. The season's over. They're dead. And the offensive line is playing poorly. I cannot get Daniel Jones hurt. That is malpractice. If this coach playing this quarterback gets him hurt and forces him to be on the roster next year, that alone should get him fired. Daniel Jones isn't the worst thing I've ever seen. Daniel Jones isn't the worst quarterback in the NFL. Daniel Jones is just not freaking good enough. And I'm tired of not good enough at the quarterback position forever, because you can live with a left tackle not good enough. You can live with wide receivers not good enough. You can live with defensive linemen not good enough. You can live with almost any other position, as long as it's not multiple. But any one position you can live with not being good enough. You can't live with the quarterback not being good enough. He's not good enough. And he's making too much money. And it's been too freaking long, and I can't watch it anymore. And he'll give you pop-up games where guys like Brent Long Island will call me and say, look at how he played in this game. Look at this and look at that. He did this. Great. How many points did they score in that game that you're bragging about? Because it wasn't 30. Because he doesn't do that. Ever. And if you watch this game, he sucked. He's awful. You could tell in the post-game comments from Dable, he was not satisfied with the quarterback position. He's just not. They dumb their game plan down. They don't do anything. It's just awful football, and I'm so freaking sick of it. And the idea that he's going to throw Daniel Jones out there because it's the best chance to win, they shouldn't be winning anymore. And I know that's counter. I know nobody understands that. I see all your responses to the stories that get put out. I know nothing about football, blah, 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 blah. I know Giants football, and I know the mediocrity, and that's being kind, that they've been experiencing for the last decade, and certainly the last 7 years with Daniel Jones. I can't watch it anymore. The only thing left for this team is to get the best draft pick possible. That's what's best. It's not winning these meaningless games at 2-5. It's over. They're freaking awful. They're going to get killed by Pittsburgh. What's that Pittsburgh defense going to do to this Giant team? What's Watt going to do with this offensive line? It's just such a bad situation right now. And they're making a mistake, because if he gets hurt, and I know people want to focus on the running back. I even saw, and listen, you want to talk about hubris. Who am I to tell you anything against what Bill Belichick has to say? But you got Bill Belichick on Pat McAfee kind of taking jabs at the Giants and Joe Shane for not spending the extra couple million dollars for Saquon Barkley. What exactly would Saquon Barkley do with this team? Barry Sanders, Jim Brown isn't worth three wins. Like, what do you think they're doing with Saquon Barkley right now? Like, honestly. What are they doing with Saquon Barkley? You think they're winning with Saquon Barkley? They're not. Why would you pay? Like, the idea that this is a mistake because he ran all over them for the Eagles have a chance to win. The Giants do not. The Giants do not. You want to get on the GM? Fine. You want to get on the GM for a good reason? Who cares about the freaking running back? How about the idea that when your left tackle goes down, your seventh overall pick, offensive lineman, Evan Neal, isn't good enough to see the field? How about your draft pick, Azudu, isn't good enough to go in there and fill and accomplish the task? How about your third-round wide receiver draft pick is useless? There's plenty of reasons to get on Joe Shane. Plenty. The running back situation is the least of it. The absolute least of it. Saquon Barkley playing in Philadelphia is the absolute least of it. I mean, it is just an embarrassment. I am so sick of the New York Giants. I'm just so sick of them. And now they're going to play Daniel Jones? For what reason? Like, explain to me why Daniel Jones is the right decision. And it's not, I have nothing against Daniel Jones. He's just not very good. He's tough as nails. He goes out there, he tucks his shoulder, he looks for contact, he runs, he takes the punishment and keeps getting up. I respect the hell out of Daniel Jones. And yeah, sure, like the last caller said, and many callers will say, under the right circumstances, could Daniel Jones be serviceable? Absolutely. I don't think it's impossible that Daniel Jones could go to a good team that has an excellent roster and be good enough to win 9-10 games. Maybe. Maybe. It's not happening here anymore. And this year's already dead. It's over. It's done. They cannot win. Why are we continuing to play him and risk worst-case scenario? Worst-case scenario, here's what you're looking for. If you play Daniel Jones, one of two things might happen. One, he might play really well, give you the best chance to win. The Giants might go on a run, win some football games, and make it to the postseason. Because otherwise, I mean, we're talking about the playoffs, right? Otherwise, what are we really talking about? Winning enough games just to not be awful? Who gives a damn? So we're talking about making the playoffs. So playing Daniel Jones gives you, theoretically, two scenarios, best case and worst case. Best case, Daniel Jones comes in, plays really well, the offense transforms himself, the offensive line gets its act together, the defense, you know, stops giving up on plays, and this team wins 7 out of the next 10 and finds its way into the postseason with 9 wins. Case number one. Case number two, Daniel Jones gets hurt again. Like he has 3 of the last 4 seasons. And possibly, obviously, bad enough where he ends the season on IR, triggering his contract for next year at $23 million. Which one of those seems more plausible to you? Which one of those scenarios seems more likely to you? Because it's not even close. There is zero chance for best case scenario. Why even put worst case scenario in play? Be done with it. Cut the damn relationship. Give him a break. Give us all a break. End this thing now. Stop playing him. Play Locke. Play DeVito. Let Brian Daboll suit up. I don't care. It makes no sense to play Daniel Jones. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Come back, continue to take your phone calls. We open it up to some football. Daniel Jones, we'll get to the Jets as well. As Hassan Reddick is in the building. And as crazy as it sounds, I know they're dead and they're most likely dead. At least they have the talent where it's plausible they go on some kind of run. And I do expect them to win this week. The Giants are dead. The Giants have a choice. The Jets don't have a choice. You have to play Aaron Rodgers and hope this thing turns around. That's easy. There is no choice. There is no discussion. That's it. Go out there. You have enough talent to win some games. Go out there and figure it out. I don't think they will necessarily. I think the odds are against that. But that's it. There's no other way to play it. New York Giants are playing it wrong. Wave the white flag. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the fam. We'll come back. Take your calls till 5 o'clock. Oh boy, 346, McMonagle here with you on the fan. 888-808-1019. Got you till 5 o'clock. You know, I mentioned in the open, I don't know, like ESPN doing this thing with you know, going at the Met fans. Like, I don't understand it. Listen, we all get that everybody wanted, outside of Met fandom and maybe some Yankee fans who wanted the Subway Series, or at least let's just say here in New York, everybody else wanted Yankees-Dodgers. Major League Baseball wanted Yankees-Dodgers. I'm sure the TV networks obviously want Yankees-Dodgers. There's no doubt about it. It's just what it is. And apparently ESPN wanted Yankees-Dodgers. I don't understand some of the social media tweets and social media stuff that ESPN has sent out. ESPN, at least that I know, two social media posts. One is the Dodger team in, you know, a tight, close picture with Mookie Betts in front of everybody else behind him. And he's holding, wearing a chain and holding World Series. And it's a clear, with orange outline, it's a clear spoof on the Mets OMG. And it even says, OMG, Mets beat the Dodgers beat the Mets. I have no idea why. Let me just, like, see if I can find it again. Yeah, I mean, OMG, Dodgers beat the Mets. And then they put out, and after that, yeah, right here. OMG, the Dodgers eliminate the Mets to advance to the World Series. And a clear spoof on the OMG chain and whatever the picture taken. Then there's another one of Ohtani standing over Grimace, like Muhammad Ali standing over Sonny Liston. Like, why are they doing this? I don't understand. Like, I understand. Like, I know they're a news gathering organization. Like, they're not. What's the editorial there? Like, why are we mocking the New York Mets and their, you know, their gimmicks, I guess, for lack of a better term? Like, why are we rubbing in the, why is ESPN rubbing it in with the Mets? They're happy the Dodgers won. I get it. Promote the hell out of it. I understand. Why does it have to be trolling the Met fan? I don't understand why ESPN would troll the Mets. I don't get it. Mocking the OMG, mocking Grimace, why? I mean, it's partly hilarious, I suppose, but I mean, I don't know why they would do it. You really have to give me a reason why, while promoting the Dodgers winning the National League Championship and heading to the World Series to take on the Yankees, why part of that promotion needs to be taking jabs directly at the Mets. I mean, I don't know. Met fans, if you want to give me a call, let me know, 888-808-1019. If that bothers you necessarily, I don't know if you should take it as a compliment. Okay, and I'm sorry, that's my fault. I don't want to get, say, ESPN sent out the tweet, or sent out the picture of the World Series. Fox Sports put out Down Goes Grimace with a picture of Ohtani. And Grimace laying underneath him on a, it looks like the Sonny Liston, Muhammad Ali picture. So that was Fox Sports. They both weren't ESPN. But why are we promoting the, I don't know, it's just funny to me. There's so much to promote. There's the Dodgers, there's obviously the Dodgers-Yankees. Like, you got Ohtani, you got Betts, you got Soto, you got Judge. There's plenty to promote. Why do you have to kick the Mets while they're down? Weird. Is it Luzzy in Lakewood?
Yeah, how you doing?
What's
C-Mac?
Up, buddy? How are you?
Like that, real quick. I think that it was Trump going to McDonald's that killed the Grimace thing. He took over the mascot.
Gotcha.
Like this. I think that if Trump doesn't start
Come on. Maybe you unintentionally said Trump after. You didn't after you made the joke, you accidentally said Trump, but we don't have, I don't really feel, you made the one joke, I let you make it, we move on. He did go to McDonald's. I did see the videos. I'm assuming you meant Judge. I'm just going to go on with Judge. You said if Judge doesn't start, you said if Trump doesn't start hitting, I'm assuming you meant Judge. Let's go with Judge. Yeah. Here's a quick prediction. And I've been thinking about this. And, you know, maybe I shouldn't give it up on a Tuesday. We'll talk about it later. If the Yankees win, the World Series MVP is going to be Aaron Judge. That's my prediction. Aaron Judge will be your World Series MVP. I expect him. You know why I expect him to get hot and to perform well? Two reasons, but one main one. He's the best hitter in the world. That's it. Bar none. He is. And I know right now, off of that home run, I'm sure there's many Yankee fans, baseball fans, who will tell me that Juan Soto's better. And that's fine. I had the same argument at the beginning of the year when Judge was struggling and everybody said, what are you, nuts? Juan Soto's clearly better. He's not. He's not. He's not a better average hitter. He's not a better power hitter. Aaron Judge is the best hitter in the world. Juan Soto has an ability that Judge hasn't shown so far to focus in on an at-bat and give you that great at-bat. He looks like a tougher out in the postseason right now. There's no doubt about it. But the best hitter in the world. I mean, the 162 matters. Like, I know we're in this world where all that matters is the postseason. Well, if all that matters is the postseason, right? And I heard actually the great Paul Rosenberg, who did a great job before me. If all that matters is the postseason, then we can expect Tommy Edman to get like a $200 million contract, right? I mean, he just won the NLCS MVP. He was killing it. He's been playing great. I mean, if he still does that in the World Series and the Dodgers win the World Series, I mean, he's in line for a huge, enormous payday, right? Just helped them win the World Series. He's going to get $250 million, right? Something like that. He's got to. I mean, all that matters is the postseason, and he's a proven postseason performer. You got to go give him a $200 million contract for Tommy Edmonds, right? The 162 still matters. Aaron Judge is the best hitter in the world. You can't argue it. He is. And he's going to come through. I have no doubt. And he's been good against the Dodgers. And yes, I do want some revenge for that wall. And this time he's going to be playing out in center field, so he doesn't have to worry about that part of the building, and they have fixed it. But I expect Judge to hit. And if you look at it, and I said this about Judge too, if you look at his series and his postseason, he was bad in the ALDS for sure. In the ALCS, he had 2 home runs, 5 RBIs in 5 games. I mean, you know, he averaged an RBI a game. It's not Judge. It's not the best hitter in the world, but he was okay. Here's the problem with Judge. My only gripe with him, really, my only gripe with Aaron Judge, especially now that they went, you know, 7-2 in the postseason in 9 games, his first inning. That's it. If you take out his first inning at bats, he's been okay. He's not been great. He certainly hasn't been what Stanton's been. He hasn't been even what Soto's been. But he's been fine. He has 2 home runs, and both of them were huge in game 2. It turned a 2-run lead into a 4-run lead, I believe. And gave this bullpen a lot more cushion. It was a big home run that changed the complexion of that game. And then clearly in game 3, the 2-run shot off of Class A to tie the game in the 8th inning down 2. That's an enormous home run. So he's had a couple of moments, and that's a huge big at-bat against the best reliever in baseball. But if you look at his first innings in 4 games this year, 4, Juan Soto and Gleyber Torres both got on base. He came up in 4 of these games, which is half of the games they've played pretty much. He came up with runners on first and second, nobody out in the first inning, and he could have given a death blow. Like, he could have broken a game open early. He could have changed the complexion. He could have helped limit the amount of innings this bullpen has thrown by giving them earlier leads. His at-bats, and in those, I think he's 0-9 now. I don't think he got a hit in the first inning. I know he was 0-8. Now they played 9 games. I'm trying to think back. I'm pretty sure he didn't make it on base in the first. He's 0-9 in the first inning. And 4 of those games, he had multiple, and probably the other, Gleyber Torres has gotten on base so much, I'd have to go back and double check. There's a chance in all 9 spots he came up with at least one runner on. But in 4 of them, he had both of them on. And he had an opportunity to deliver a gut punch to the other team early on and break a game open, unable to do so. Well, Soto hit a 2-run home run in one of the games in the first inning, so he clearly didn't come up with a runner on in that situation. But anyway, my point stands firm. His first inning at-bats have been brutal. After that, not so bad. Not as good as what you hope, but not so bad. And I'm telling you right now, Aaron Judge is going to be the World Series MVP. If the Yankees win, and we'll get to that as we move forward, I expect Aaron Judge to hit in the series. I expect Aaron Judge now, especially with, I don't know how they'll do it. I'm assuming they're just going to leave Stanton in the fourth spot. They might put Rizzo there. I don't think they'll put Jazz there anymore. He's been awful. You might want to take some pressure off of Jazz. Although you don't like stacking the bottom of the order against lefties, it's been a huge thing for Aaron Boone. He's done a great job with it. Like, people complain about, oh, just put Giancarlo fifth. Why are you putting these guys fourth? Because you also, as we've seen, the bottom of the order comes up in eighth inning. You need hitters down there. You can't just have everyone wants all the best hitters at the top. You put all your best hitters first, they get the most at-bats. True, but we've seen the bottom of the order come through with big at-bats. You don't want to just stack lefties to give, or righties to give easy bullpen decisions to the manager. And you also want at least one or two good hitters down there to give you an inning if you need it in the post, in a big spot in the eighth inning. So even though it seems stupid, you put Jazz up there or Rizzo up there or Wells back up there, and it makes decisions a little bit tougher, especially at the bottom of the order for the opposing manager, and you don't limit yourself to all your, you know, just all your bad hitters at the bottom of the order. But I'm assuming they're going to at least keep, I think they'll probably keep Stanton in the 4, if not the 5, but that's legitimate protection right now, as Stanton's been just absolutely crazy. I know he's already been intentionally walked Soto to get to him, and now he's got Stanton going on fire behind him. I really think Judge is going to come through, and he's going to come through big. 888-808-1019, quick break, update, come back. Got you for one more hour till 5 o'clock right here on The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.